We'll start here today on Daf Tes Amud Beis, and we are about 8 lines down from the top. We're looking at a pasuk Vayashilum, which is in Shmos Yud Beis, Vashem Nasa Neschein Ha'am Beinei Mitzrayim Vayashilum. Omer Ami Melamed Sheshilum Bal Korcham. The word Vayashilum with a mem at the end means that they were forced to give. In other words, it was part of the Hashgach, the divine plan, that the Mitzrim would give up their Klei Kesef and their Klei Zav for the benefit of Klal Yisrael. Now here, we have two possibilities. We've explained this according to one Man D'Omer, Ika D'Amri, the first Man D'Omer quoted here, Bal Korcham D'Mitzrayim. According to the second Man D'Omer, Ika D'Omer, Bal Korcham D'Yisrael. In other words, it was the Mitzrayim that forced the Jewish people to take the Kelim. Ma'adi Omar Bal Korchim Mitzrayim Midechsiv Unavas Bayis Techalek Sholol. This pasuk in Tehillim teaches us that Klal Yisrael took from the Mitzrayim the Klei Kesef, Klei Zav against the will of the Mitzrayim. Ma'adi Omar Bal Korchim Yisrael Mishum Masoi, which means that it was difficult for Bnei Yisrael to carry all this wealth, these Klei Kesef, Klei Zav. They wanted to go out with very little baggage, you know, to carry. That would be a major hassle. So the first Man D'Omer looks at the word Shalal, and Shalal always means something that you take against the will of a person, like a Shalal Milchama, when you go out to battle. And according to that opinion, this Pasuk of Shalal in Tehillim is referring to Mitzrayim. And where do we see in this pasuk anything that indicates that we're talking about Mitzrayim? And the answer is that the earlier pasuk in this very same chapter in Tehillim Samaches says Motzi Asirim Bekoshros, and that's clearly a reference to Bnei Yisrael. Now it's true that there was another Biza, which is the Biza Sayom. This is the Biza that they took when they went out of Mitzrayim. But we know that this pasuk is referring to the Biza when they left Egypt, as before they left Egypt, when the slaves of Mitzrayim asked for the Klei Kesef, because it says Motzi Asirim Bekoshros. And this is not referring to Biza as Mitzrayim. Okay, then, so Bizas Mitzrayim is one thing. There's going to be another thing called Bizas Hayom, and that's the Bizas Hayom. How do we know that this pasuk is referring to the Biza before they left Mitzrayim? And the answer is because this parasha says Motzi Asirim Bekoshros. Now, Klal Yisrael knew that ultimately they would have the Biza at the Yam, and therefore they would say, why should we carry out this Bizas Mitzrayim on our way to Mitzrayim? They would rather just leave these Klei Kesef, Klei Zav in Mitzrayim, because they knew they would get the Bizas Hayom. And let the Mitzrayim carry out these heavy Kelim, and we'll get it from them after Yam Suf. Now, you might ask, Bizas Hayom is a lot greater than Bizas Mitzrayim. And yet, when it came to Biza Sayom, Klal Yisrael had no inhibitions, and they took the Biza. Here, they took the Biza reluctantly, according to the second Man D'Omer, who says here it was Bal Korcham Shel Yisrael. So why is it that when it came to Biza Sayom, they had no problem? So if you take a look in the Ein Yaakov, he says the following, that at the time of Yitzias Mitzrayim, they were afraid of this tremendous burden that they would have to carry. And therefore, since they knew that the Mitzrayim would run after them, and they would be held back by carrying this heavy burden, that's why they were very hesitant to want to take this burden. But later, when they got to Kriyas Yam Suf, and they saw the Mitzrayim dead al Sfas Hayom, and they would no longer be in pursuit of Bnei Yisrael, there they had no inhibitions to take the Bizas Mitzrayim, and they didn't refuse to do so. Now let's keep in mind that according to the Mechilta, in a situation where there was a She'ela Bal Korcham Shel Yisrael, that when the Israeli would say to the Mitzri, Tein li chefetz ploni, and the Mitzri would say, Tolecha, take it, and get out. It's very possible that what the Gemara means by Bal Korcham D'Yisrael is this is a shiurim, this is a way that we could judge whether or not it's Rechush Gadol, and there was a kiyum of that Avtochet Avraham Avinu V'yachakach Yetzu their rechush gadol. If they, when a person gets a limited amount of rechush as a gift, so he takes it willingly. But once he gets to the point where he thinks it's saturated, he has enough, and he doesn't want any more, then you know anything beyond that is rechush gadol. So since part of this clay kesef kesov had to be given to Klal Yisrael, take more than Mitzrim said, and the Klal Yisrael were hesitant to take it, then you knew that it was already a rechush gadol. Now the Gemara says, "Vayenatzlu es Mitzrayim." What do we do with this pasuk? And here we have two interpretations. We have one from Rabbi Ami and the second from Reish Lakish. Rabbi Ami says, "Malamichasu kimitzuda," which means a net to capture birds. She'ein ba dagan. If you don't put dagan food into the net, into the trap, then the ophos, the birds, are not going to fly in there. And what this means is that there was nothing left to Mitzrayim. Everything was cleaned out. It was like a mitsuda with nothing left in it. And Reish Lakish has a slightly different formulation. He says, Asa'ua kimitsula she'ein ba dogim, which means that you have a certain kind of a trap, and what you do is you put fish into the trap, and based on this fish, the birds come and they look for the fish and they get trapped in the fish. Now, what's the difference here between Rabbi Ami and Reish Lakish? They seem to be saying more or less the same thing. That when it says in the pasuk, "Vayenatzlu es Mitzrayim," it means "Vayiroknu." Vayiroknu means they completely cleaned out Mitzrayim. And in fact, Hagav Unkelus on the pasuk himself translated as "Vayirokinu," that they completely cleaned out Mitzrayim. There was nothing left in Mitzrayim. That's "Vayenatzlu." And Vayenatzlu also has a lashon of mitsuda to it, and that's why the Gemara calls it a mitsuda. So what's the difference between the two interpretations? According to the first interpretation, the real damage to Mitzrayim was towards the future. Because just like a mitsuda is meant to capture the birds in the future, if there's no dung on there, it's rake, it's completely empty, then no bird is going to fly in there. So as long as Mitzrayim had a great deal of rechush, then they could control the world. And all the civilizations were subjugated to them, because they would pay taxes to the Mitzrayim and everything else. Once Klal Yisrael left Mitzrayim, and Mitzrayim was now cleaned out of everything, Mitzrayim went down in its chashivus, and it would never go up again. In the second interpretation, Reish Lakish, the ikar, the main thrust of the nezik of the loss to Mitzrayim was ala avar, that all the otzros, all the great treasures of Mitzrayim and the rechush that they had accumulated over the course of time were completely cleared out. And the reason why the Torah went out of its way to describe the reikonus of Mitzrayim is in order to indicate that there were no dogim. Dogim is the shvach of Mitzrayim, right? We say about Zocharnu es hadog asher nochal b'Mitzrayim chinam, but there were no dogim left. And this was completely removed from Mitzrayim. The big question is, what's Bizas Hayom? If they were completely cleaned out at the time that they took the Klei Kesef, Klei Zov, what happened in Bizas Hayom when they got to the Yamsuf? There shouldn't have been any Rechush left. And here we have two possible answers. One answer is that Mishar Ha'arim V'Amedinos B'Mitzrayim Lo Shalu, that there were only areas that were neighboring on the areas where the Jewish people lived, that's where they took the clay kesef. But the majority of Egypt, there were no clay kesef taken by Yisrael. So there was still something left, which the Paro told that when we go in pursuit of Klal Yisrael, gather together what's ever left and take it out, and that was the Biza of Yam. Another interpretation is that the Biza Sayam was taken from the Otzros, not from the individual Egyptians, but rather from the treasure chests and the treasuries of Mitzrayim. Now the Gemara is going to darshan another pasuk. So let's make sure we all have the place here. We're about to get to the Mishnah Daf Tesam in Beis Mirtz Hashem. We are approximately 15 lines down. The first word of the line is the one we want to study now. Eya Asher Eya. And here Moshe Rabbeinu at the snare is commanded by Hashem to go to Paro and take the people out of Mitzrayim. So Moshe Rabbeinu asks, what am I going to say to B'nai Yisrael, they'll ask me, who is the name of this God of our forefathers that was sent by, that you were sent by him to take us out of Mitzrayim? And the Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to answer, Vayomer Elokim el Moshe, Eyeh Asher Eyeh. Now notice, we have a double language here, Eyeh Asher Eyeh. And then in the next pasuk again, it says, Vayomer Kos Omar L'Bnei Yisrael Eyeh Shlachani Aleichem. So we have the double Eyeh in the first part of the pasuk, and then we have the third Eyeh afterwards. So why do we need this, the double Eyeh? And then what do we have in the next pasuk? So Gemara says, Eyeh Asher Eyeh, Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Moshe Leich Emor Lehem L'Yisrael Ani Ayisi Machem B'Shibud Zeh Ani Eyeh in the future there'll be other exiles, but God says, I'm going to be with you, I'm going to accompany you in Mitzrayim, and I will be with you in the other Shibudim, in the other Malchus Asher Eyeh. And now we have to ask, why is it in the next time it says Eyeh only one time, Eyeh Shlachani Aleichem? What happened in between? On the one, you know, at time T1, HaKadosh Baruch Hu turns to Moshe and says to the people, Eyeh Asher Eyeh, I'll be with you in future Golios. Time T2, he drops one of the Eyehs and we're down to one. What took place in between? Amar Lefanav, Moshe Rabbeinu came up with a logical argument. He said, Ribono Shel Olam, Dayo Litzar B'Shaita. You know, the people are going through what they're experiencing, the Shibud of Mitzrayim. Now you have to tell them there'll be other Shibud Malchus in the future. That's going to just break them, break their spirits. So do me a favor, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, let's not tell them about future Golios. Now's not the right moment to mention that. Amar Lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Leichem Mor Lehem Eyeh Shlachani Aleichem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu accepts the advice, the request of Moshe Rabbeinu. He drops one of the Eyehs, and now there's only one Eyeh left. I will be with you in Mitzrayim. And here we have a major controversy as to how to understand this Gemara. One school of thought, which is headed up by the Marsha, says that actually HaKadosh Baruch Hu accepted Moshe and Moshe's argument, which is unbelievable. We should learn a great Musa from here, that a person, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not Omid Al Daito, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is willing and not be embarrassed to change his mind and capitulate and realize that he, you know, the argument against him is a great argument, how much more so is a moral lesson for us that when we are proven wrong, we should back down. The other way of interpreting is no, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wasn't backing down at all, but it was Moshe Rabbeinu who misunderstood the original mandate, or the first mandate of Eyeh Asher Eyeh. Mitchila HaKadosh Baruch Hu had in mind to tell Klal Yisrael that he, with a capital H, would be with them and come to them in Mitzrayim, and only in Mitzrayim. Moshe Rabbeinu derived the conclusion that when Hashem said Eyeh Asher Eyeh, he meant that Moshe was being mandated as the emissary to tell the people of Egypt, the people of Israel in Egypt, that God would be with them in future Golios. That was a mistake on Moshe's part. Because Baruch Hu now corrects the misunderstanding of Moshe and tells Moshe that that's not what I had in mind. I was telling you, Moshe Rabbeinu, Eyeh Asher Eyeh. I was revealing to you, Moshe Rabbeinu, that I would be with the Jewish people in the future Golios. I never meant to instruct you to notify the people of Israel about the future Golios. Amar Rabbi Avo, now we get to Elio on Har Carmel. The Pasuk tells us in the 18th chapter of Melachim Aleph, Aneini Hashem Aneini. So we know the history here, that the people were tempted by Baal, and Elio HaNovi sets up on Har Carmel a public debate that's going to take place between the Nevi'a Baal and the rest of Klal Yisrael. And Klal Yisrael are going to witness how Elio magically, supernaturally is going to prove that the Avodah Zorah of Baal is worthless. And this is at the period of Achav, when Klal Yisrael was guilty, and Achav as the king of Israel was up on top of Avodah Zorah. They were suffering for 3 years with a famine as a punishment for the Avodah. At the end, Elio gathers together the people of Israel, Har Carmel, and the Nevi Baal are there. And he challenges them, they're 850 in number, and he challenges them to bring two parim, two cows. And he says to the Nevi Baal, let's see if you can bring down an Eish min HaShamayim. And Elio, after setting up two mizbechos, he gets to his mizbech, and he pours water on the cows and so forth and so on. He turns to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that God should answer his pleas and bring down an Eish from Shamayim. The Nevi Baal try and they couldn't do it. They tried Menaboker, Adatzorayim, no. No success. Now it's Mincha time. Elio brings his korban, he prays Hashem, and God brings down the fire from Shemayim. Why does Elio, in his prayers to Hashem, double his language? Anenu Hashem Aneni. Why Aneni twice? Lomar Mar Elio Aneni Shtei Pa'amim. Melamed, says Rabbi Avo, Sha'amar Elio Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Rivono Shalom Aneni. This is what Elio is praying for. Aneni Shtei Redesh Min HaShemayim. But he has a second aneni, shetasiach daitam. Try to discourage them from having an evil thought that they will think that Elio pulled off some sort of kishuf and the whole thing was a trick of the eye or some sort of sorcery, and that would undermine the whole purpose to prove God Hashem Olakim. That through this ness, HaKadosh Baruch Hu would make sure to guarantee that the people will accept this miracle as such. And the people very often are used to attributing these kinds of events and these kinds of supernatural experiences to kishuf. And this is so true of human nature, that so many times we fail to see what's in front of our eyes, that this is a miracle of Hashem. We find all sorts of explanations, we attribute it. So when a leader of Israel wants to uplift and inspire his people, he has to not only inspire them, but he has to make sure that they understand that this is the hand of God. Now begin the Mishnah, which is a continuation of the previous Mishnah, in which we spoke about Kriyat Shema Shel Arvis. Now we get to Kriyat Shema Shel Shachris. And the Mishnah clarifies, May Emasai Kor Neshma B'Shachris. When is the earliest time in the morning, Ubikumecha, to read Kriyat Shema? And the first opinion of the Tanakhama is Mishayakir Bein Tcheles L'Lovan. It's light enough out that you can make the distinction between two colors, and these are Tcheles and Lovan. That's kind of a blue that we use as a dye in tzitzis, and it makes sense that the Tcheles should be the simon for the time, because we're going to read the parash of Tcheles as the third parash of Kriyat Shema, the parash of tzitzis, and Lovan would be the white strings. So now we have a very obvious or profound distinction between these two colors of white and blue, and they're so different in contrast that we have to wait until there's quite a bit of light until we can recite Kriyat Shema. This is after Alos HaShachar. This is later than dawn. And the Meiri asks the question, we had a Gemara earlier, that from dawn and on, you could fulfill the mitzvah of Bikumecha, because the people who wake up, some people wake up at dawn. Here we seem to assume that we have to wait a little time until most of the people are waking up, and that's Mishayakir. And he says, as we'll soon see, that this sugya and this Mishnah is not a contradiction of what we saw before, as far as being Mekayim the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema immediately with Amud HaShachar, because the Amud HaShachar possibility is a fallback possibility. It's not Lechatchila, it's only B'di'evit. And we'll explain this as we go along. The L'chatchila is to wait until the time which is after Amud HaShachar, which is called Mishayakir. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, no. We have to wait till a later time period, and that's called Bein Tcheles L'Karsi. A minimum amount of light would be sufficient to distinguish between Tcheles and Lavan. But now we're getting two colors that are much more similar, and these are Tcheles and Karsi. Karsi, in English, in Hebrew, it's called Karishim. In English, it's called a leek. It's a kind of a greenish color, and it's not so radically different than blue. And in order to make the distinction between these two colors, you need a lot more light, so we're going to have to wait more time. So we have the following three periods of time. We have Amud HaShachar, otherwise known as Alos. And then we have a period of time which there's a little amount of light, but it's enough. Mishayakir Bein Tcheles L'Lavan. Now we need more light, and the earliest time for Kriyat Shema, according to Rabbi Eliezer, is going to be Mishayakir Bein Tcheles L'Lavan. Lekarsi. Now we have a fourth period of time, and that's Ad HaNeitzachama. Now this addition in the Mishnah is a continuation of the words of Rabbi Eliezer, that what we're saying is that perhaps he should delay Kriyat Shema until HaNeitzachama. That means when the sun rises and you will see the sun above the mountains. Oh, the interpretation that we offered would reflect the sheet of Abayi in the Gemara, who's going to say that L'kriyat Shema L'vatikin, and he's going to quote Rabbi Yochanan on that, which means that we should wait longer until HaNeitzachama to recite Kriyat Shema in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Vatikin, which we're going to spend some time discussing. However, although Abaye is of that opinion, if you read the Mishnah carefully, this statement of Rabbi Eliezer, it has the word Ad. And the word Ad means, when is the latest time for Kriyat Shema? Until now we've been discussing the earliest time for Kriyat Shema. We spoke about Alos HaShachar, we spoke about Shiyakir, and then we have Karsi and Tcheles. Now we're asking about the latest time. And how do I know this? Because in the next line of the Mishnah, it says, Rabbi Yeshua Omer Ad Shalosh Shalos. That means from the beginning of the day, we wait until 3 hours have passed. Shekein derech malachim lamod bi shalosh shalos. That the kings will get out of bed 3 hours into the day. They live a life of luxury. Baruch Hashem, they're powerful, they're wealthy. So we see that the word Ad in this Mishnah is addressing the question, when is the latest time for Kriyat Shema? Not the earliest time. And here we have the machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says, Bekumecha means the time that most people get up. Most people get up by Anetz. Halavai, I should say. And Rabbi Yeshua says that most people, although they get up at Anetz, but there are people who get up a little bit later, and he gives the example of the Malachim, that the Malachim get up after 3 hours into the day. So that according to Rabbi Eliezer, we look at when do most people get up, and that's an earlier time. Rabbi Yeshua says, well, there are still some individuals on the face of the globe who are getting up even later, and that's called Bekumecha. Now the Mishnah adds a postscript, HaKori Mikan V'Elech Lo Hifsid. What happens if a person missed the Zman of Kriyat Shema? Is there any point whatsoever to read Kriyat Shema after Sof Zmana? And the Mishnah says yes. Why? Because Ka'odam HaKori BaTorah. Now here we have Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah says, what's the Mishnah coming to be Mechadish? It's coming to teach me that a person who reads Kriyat Shema fulfills the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. That's obvious. That's pshita. Kriyat Shema is no different than any other part of the Torah. So for sure you get a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. And Rabbeinu Yonah wants to suggest, and we'll get into this in Mirtz Hashem a little bit later, that the chiddush of this Mishnah is that here you're allowed to read Kriyat Shema Baal Peh. Well, normally, Dvarim, Sheviksav, Yetar, Rashayim, Lomar, Baal Peh, you're not allowed to read Psukim without looking inside, because the Psukim are part of the Torah Sheviksav. But here, since he's used to reading Kriyat Shema for the sake of the mitzvah, and there, in the context of reading Kriyat Shema as a mitzvah, the Torah is Kriya, you don't have this limitation of having to read it from inside a Sefer. And therefore, they allowed you to read Kari Vetar Baal Peh, even though it's Torah Shebichsav, and the reason for that is because he's used to reading it as Kriyat Shema. Now, on this piece, we're going to have a machlokas on Daf Yud. I'm just giving you a preview of coming attractions between the Amoraim and the Gemara. Some are going to interpret this Gemara Kipshuto, and that means that he gets schar, he'll be rewarded for Kriyat Shema, even when he reads it Li'achar Zmano, as if he was an individual who was reading a parasha in the Torah. And that's what really stimulated the mind of Rabbeinu Yonah to ask, why is that a chiddush? For sure, he would be able to get tzchar as a kiyum of reading psukim in the Torah, because that is the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. And as we said earlier, the answer of Rabbeinu Yonah. Later on, we get to Gemara in Yaf Yud, we'll see a whole different interpretation of this Mishnah. Now let's start the Gemara. My ben tcheles lilavon. The Gemara vacillates back and forth. What does it mean, according to the Tanakhama, being Tcheles L'Lovan? Are we talking about two separate items? One is Tcheles, one is Lovan. Or are we talking about like a bundle that has both Tcheles and Lovan? In Elam, if we're going to assume that we're talking about Bein Gvava D'Amra Chivara. L'Gvava D'Amra D'Tchalta Chivara means white. Right, like mechuvar kesimla, like it's clear as a white garment. Gvava, which you'll see in Perikira and Shabbos, refers to a bundle, and it's a bundle of what we call tzemer. So you have a bundle of tzemer that was not dyed; it's white, and you have a bundle of wool of tzemer that was dyed blue. The Gemara says, you know what? If you have two separate items, one is blue and one is white, havalaila nami maybe yoda. Even with a little bit of light from the moon or from the stars, you would be able during the nighttime to differentiate between these two colors. They would be so radically different. And now we're looking for a period of time when there's light out in order to fulfill the mitzvah of bekumecha. Ella, around the Gemara says, bein tchelus sheba l'lavan sheba. We have one gvava, we have one bundle. It is one. It's one ball of tzemer, as you would say, ball of wool, and part of it was successfully dyed, and it's blue, but part of it didn't get the dye, and it's white. And now it's a little bit difficult because there's some admixture here in one bundle, in one gvava, and now you need some extra light. It's not something that you could distinguish and differentiate between at night. Tanya, we learned that a brisa, Rabbi Meir Omer, when is the earliest time for Kriyat Shema? Mishiyakir ben Zev lekelev. There are two animals that are very similar in their appearance, a dog and a wolf. And this is all a Mishnah in Kelayim, because the Mishnah Kelayim wants to know about Kelayim Behema, if you marbia, two different species. And these are two different species, but they look very, very similar. So you have to know about Hilchas Harbas Kelayim. Unfortunately, Masechta Kelayim is not part of the Daf Yomi. It should be, but it's not. In any event, Rabbi Akiva Omer, that when is the earliest time for Kriyat Shema? Mishiyakir Bein Chamor La'arod. So chamor is a donkey, arod is another type of donkey, and the one is out there in the wilderness, it's a wild donkey, one is trained in the urban centers. They are also two species, but very, very similar. And again, take a look at the first perek in Kelayim to see where these two species are. Now, before we ask the major question here, is there a difference between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Akiva as to when is the earliest time of Kriyat Shema? Well, let's just read the end of the Brice of Acherim Omrim. A third opinion is, Misha Yires Chavero Rachok Daladamas V'Yakirenu. If he sees his friend who is four amas away from him, let's call it 8 feet, and he could recognize him, he could identify him. And Omar Rav Huna Halacha Ke'Acherim, we accept the third shita in this brisa. Let's just make a few points here, some of which are less important, some are more important. A lesser important point is, who are these acherim? The Gemara tells us in Horios that acherim is Rabbi Meir. Here it's difficult to say that it's Rabbi Meir, unless we assume that Rabbi Meir changed his mind and originally identified the earliest time for Kriyat Shema in one way, which is called Zev Lekelev, and now he came to the conclusion that it's Dalet Amos Mishiyakir Chavira. Second point, which is a little bit more important, we should know that Mishiyakir in terms of a friend means not his best friend, because he could recognize maybe even in the dark, but rather it's someone that he doesn't see on a regular basis, but he knows him casually, and therefore from a long distance it's going to be very difficult for him to recognize him unless he has some element of light. And therefore the Acherim here represent a Shita which would require that we wait a little bit longer. Now, as far as Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Akiva are concerned, it's very possible that they both came up at the same time period, but why do they mention two different distinctions, two different animals? And why Bechlal are they pressing the issue of an animal? Well, as far as the third parsha of Kriyat Shema is concerned, which says Ureisem Oso, we understand that the word Oso is a reference to the tzitzis. And that's why the Mishnah that we just learned mentions the Mishiyakir Tseva HaTcheles. And the Tanakhama mentions that since it's already are made up of not just tchelis but also lavan, so that's the reason also that refers to the tzitzis. And Rabbi Eliezer Sovar, he's of the opinion that tchelis and karsi, as we said earlier. But now we get to the brisa of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Akiva. They have a different pasuk. They're looking at the pasuk of Alechtech Abaderech. That pasuk is supposed to tell me when is the earliest time for Kriyat Shema, when a person is out there on the derech during the morning. And Rabbi Meir says he has to be very careful about an animal called a zev, because this zev is a dores. It's a very dangerous wolf. And he will only go out when there's enough light that would keep the wolves away. Rabbi Akiva adds Chamor La Rod, because our road is also a dangerous attacking, you know, belligerent animal. And this is a time period when it gets lighter. The Acherim say that we have to wait even a little bit longer. Omar Abaye. Abaye wants to know, how do we paskin? When it says over here, Omar Avhuna Locha Kacherim, what does that mean? Abaye says the following, Litfilin Ke'acherim l'kriyat shma kivasikin. The thrust of what Rav Huna was talking about is to paskin, when do we put on tefillin? Tefillin is at a time period that's a little bit earlier, as the Gemara is going to tell us on Daf Yudalid, than kriyat shma. And halacha here is going to be paskin like acherim, that the earliest time for anochas kriyat shma is when we can recognize a friend that we don't know that well in a richuk, in a distance of Dalid Amos. As far as Kriyat Shema, Kivasikin, the Amar Rabbi Yochanan, now we're introducing the concept of Vasikin. Vasikin are the humble people that love mitzvahs, is Mitchila Lizroach, Maschil Lizroach. It means you can read Kriyat Shema, but only from the time of Netzach Hama, from the beginning of sunrise, so to speak, when the sun appears on the horizon, on the eastern horizon. And the reason for that is because we want him to conclude Kriyat Shema and synchronize that with our Netzach Hama. That's another element in why and how we derive this conclusion that Netzach Hama is the time for Shmon Esrei, but we want to have Smichus Gula Tefillah, and therefore Rabbi Yochanan, as Abaye understands it, is going to advocate that we delay the Zman of Kriyat Shema. In other words, even though the Zman of Kriyat Shema is here, we have Mishayakir, but nevertheless, let's wait until we get close to Netzach Hama so we can obtain the special kiyum of Masikin, and therefore we're going to, in a sense, be Mavate, we're going to give up on Zrizim Akdim LeMitzvahs for the greater mitzvah of Vasikin. Please mention the fact that we paskin Laila loves Mantfilin in this Gemara, because if Laila's Mantfilin, which is one opinion of Menachos, then what's Abaye talking about when he's waiting for daybreak and Mishayakir? Secondly, you should know that we had a drasha earlier on Daf Vav, if you remember. It's a good time for Chazar, Vero, Kol Ami Aretz, Ki Shem Hashem Nikra Alecha, and that pasuk is referring to Tfilin, we said, and therefore we want to put on the Tfilin at a time when people could see the Tfilin, and that's why we wait till Mishayakir. Okay, fine. Tanya Nami Hochi, we have a Braisa. Vasikin are you Gomer Mosa? They would synchronize that they can complete Kriyat Shema with its brachos. And now we're talking about the bracha lachrei of Gol Yisrael. Im HaNetzach Hama. At that moment of Netzach Hama, Kadesh Yismach Gula Tfila. So that then immediately after he completes Gol Yisrael, he will recite Shmon Esrei. And that Shmon Esrei will be recited at the first moment of daybreak, which is called Hanetzach Hama, v'nitzo mispal bayom. He davens during the day, and that's what Omer Abzera Maikra'a, what's the source for this great kiyum of davening at Hanetzach Hama? And therefore, since Smichus Gula Tefillah, we want to synchronize Kriyat Shema and Gol Yisrael with Hanetzach Hama. Yira'ucha im shemesh, a pasuk in Tehillim. Yira'ucha, they will fear you. Im shemesh, with daybreak, when the sun breaks out on the horizon, v'lifnei yoreach dor dorim, for generations lifnei yoreach. This lifnei yoreach is going to teach us something about the second Zman Kriyat Shema. But as far as the first Zman Kriyat Shema, it's yera'ucha im shemesh. Yera'ucha, yira refers to Kabbalah Sol Malcha Shemayim in Kriyat Shema. Im shemesh means Somach Lizricha Sachama, when the sun rises, and from the fact that the Torah tells us that this man Kriyat Shema has to be close to Zricha, we know
and we have clear evidence that the Zman of Tefillah is with Zricha itself, because we have to be Somech Geula L'Tefillah. Mention the Sugya Megillah Daf Chaf that addresses the question, those mitzvahs that are daytime mitzvahs, when is the earliest time to do the mitzvah? And L'Chadchila, the Gemara establishes, we wait till Anetzach Chama, because that's Vadayom. You know, before Anetzach Chama, there may be some sunlight coming up on the horizon, but yet the sun hasn't shown up yet, and a person might mistakenly start the day too early and fulfill the mitzvahs when it's Shelo Bizmana. But when we're talking about Vasikin, these are people who are so zaris b'mitzvahs, they're going to look for the first opportune moment to fulfill the mitzvah. In this case, the mitzvah of tefillah, they want to fulfill it with Anetzach Chama, with Yom. And therefore, they will synchronize their Kriyat Shema of Bishal Bacha with Hanetzach Chama. They'll mekayim a double kiyum, number one, smichus gula tefillah, but number two, what's exciting for us now is the mitzvah of Vasikin. And now the Gemara is going to discuss the mitzvah of Vasikin, this extra kiyum, to complete Kriyat Shema and Hanetzach Chama. Heid Rav Yossi ben Elyakim Mishum Kahola Kadisha Dirushalayim. Again, there's a whole discussion about which Chachamim make up this so-called community of Chachamim, and that's a Yushalmi in the beginning of Masechta Brachos. What do we testify about this Kahola Kadisha, the Kala, the Kedusha of Yushalayim? We're not talking about the burial society, but we're talking about Kol HaSomech Geula Tefillah. They used to be so careful and meticulous about Smichus Geula Tefillah, because Eino Nizo Kol HaYom Kulo, it's a skula, a protection for a person for the entire day. And again, we're going to see later on that there was an individual named Rabbi Bruna, and they will single him out for a, you know, as a paradigm, a case of a person who was so careful about smichus gula tefillah, keminag avasikin. And the Gemara means to say that bisomek gula tefillah keminag avasikin, where he makes sure that he gets both kiyumim, that is a special level and achievement. Amar Rabbi Zera Eini, is this really true that if a person is mekayim this minog of smichus gula tefillah and he obtains that special kiyum, he's protected during the entire day? What are you going to do? V'hana samchi v'itzake. As a matter of fact, I can tell you, that I am somek gula tefillah, and yet I get hurt during the day. Amrulei, so the Bnei Yeshiva told Rabbi Zera, "B'mai itzakt? What kind of hezek did you experience?" They want to sort of belittle the hezek to show him that he really wasn't injured at all. The amtayis asol avei malka. They brought hadassim from the king's palace, and that was hadassim that were collected as a tax, and so what happens is that the tax collectors come representing the melech, and they clear off these hadassim. So as if to say, Rabbi Zera, that I have to suffer because I have to pay this tax. So the Gemara says, no. Hasam Nami, in that situation, you have to understand that you have to pay the tax. You shouldn't be complaining and visiting and viewing this as we call in Yiddish an upkommunish, as if you're being punished. Why? Because you have to recognize and acknowledge in a certain sense of gratitude what the king is doing for you. He's collecting a tax, he needs the funds, and ultimately, if he's not a despotic king, he's going to use these funds for your benefit, the benefit of the entire community. And Chazal is going to tell us later on in this Masechta on Rabbi Yochanan, Liolam Yishtadel Adu Lorutz Lekras Malach. A person should run to see a king. Exactly which kings, we don't know. But Chazal say that even to see Malchei Akum, that's also an Inyan, and then he should be able to differentiate between the countenance of Malchei Akum and Malchei Yisrael, but that's a different discussion. A person should always try to run to see and not only to behold and encounter the Malchei Yisrael, but to mechabi them. For lo lekras Malchei Yisrael, b'vadel afilu lekras Malchei Ovdei Kochavim Shem Yizkeh Ol Yolam Abba. It means Yavchin Bein Malchei Yisrael Levein Malchei Ovdei Kochavim. You'll be able to distinguish between the covet, the great covet that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give the glory to Malchei Yisrael as opposed to a low ebb glory, if glory at all, any covet whatsoever for Malchei Ovdei Kochavim. But you have to have an eagerness to get the opportunity to have some sort of encounter with the Malchus. Don't see that and relate to that as a nezek.
When you go up to Eretz Yisrael,
please check out my brother Rabbi Bruna and find out how he's doing. And do it publicly, but Maimad Kolachabura. In other words, when this Rabbi Bruna is surrounded by his students, by his community, that's when I want you to ask how he's doing. Why? First of all, that'd be a great cover, the Aram Gadolhu. But secondly, perhaps more important, you'll see that he's a person who's sameach b'mitzvahs. You'll be able to learn from him. This Gemara sounds Hasidish. You know, take a look at an Aram Gadol and be nispoiled from his love for mitzvahs. It's written all over his countenance. And that's what I want you to be inspired and impressed. These are stories that Terry will tell about Reb Zusha. You know that Rebbe Elimelech was a brother to Reb Zusha. He would send his students to see Reb Zusha. Reb Zusha was poor as a church mouse, and yet see his simcha. It's always good to get an impression of the countenance of a person b'simcha when he does mitzvahs. And Zimna Chad, I can tell you about my brother Rabbi Bruna, that on one occasion, and probably this was very frequent, Samak u'ul etfila v'lo pasak choch. There was no termination of a joyous face, of a smile on his face the entire day, because he felt such love for the mitzvahs, and he was so excited about the fact that on that day he was mekayim smichus gula tefillah the way it should be, the way it should be fulfilled. The Gemara now asks, Hechi Matzi Samach. How could a person be so megula tefillah? We have a principle of Rabbi Yochanan. The Omer Rabbi Yochanan b'tchila, when a person starts the Shmon Esrei, after he recited Baruch Atah Hashem Gal Yisrael, who Omer, you should recite a pasuk until Nun Aleph Hashem Sosai Tiftach Ufi Agiti Lasecha. Ulevasofi, after he finishes the Shmon Esrei, Omer, you should recite a pasuk in that same book of Tilim, but this time in chapter Yutes Yilu Ratzon Emefi VeEnyon Libi Lefanech Hashem Tzuriv Agali. So since he has the pasuk Hashem Sosai Tiftach wedged in between Gal Yisrael, the beginning of his tefillah, then it's impossible for him to be Mekayim Smichus Gula tefillah. Amar Rabbi Lazar Tehei B'Tfila Shel Arvis. The reference here of Smichus Gula Tfila with Rabbi Yochanan's addition that he should start his Tfila with Hashem Sosai Tiftach, that's only with regard to Tfila Shel Arvis. Why? Because the Gula from Mitzrayim, and this is something we discussed back on Daf Dalid, took place during the day. And therefore the Bracha of Gal Yisrael links us to Tefillah, which is Avoda, and you go from Gula to Avoda, to becoming an Eved without any interruptions. But at night there was no Gula. We didn't go out of Mitzrayim till the day of the 15th of Nisan, and therefore there's no Smichus Gula Tefillah. And therefore, Rabbi Yochanan would encourage us to recite Hashem Sosai Tiftach before Tfilas Arvis, the Shmon Esrei of Arvis. Fek the Gemara v'Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ezu ben Olam Abba, Zeu Asome Ke'ula Shal Arvis, L'Tfila Shal Arvis. That the ultimate kiyum that will guarantee a person a chelik in Olam Abba is Smichus Gula L'Tfila Shal Arvis. Which means that, as the Gemara explains above on Daf Dalit on the base, that the beginning of the Gula took place at night when Paro was Meshacher the Avadim, and therefore there's a Kiyum of Gula even at night. Ella, so Rabbi Lazar now backtracks, and he says, Tehei b'tfilas mincha, where there's no smichas Gula tfila, that's the only time that Rabbi Yochanan advocates that we recite the Pasuk Hashem Sosai Tiftach, but with regard to Shachris and Mayriv, both of which have the key of a smichus gula tefillah, drop Hashem Sosai Tiftach. Rav Ashi Omer No. Afilu Tema Kulu. When Rav Yochanan encouraged us to recite Hashem Sosai Tiftach, he referred to all three tefillos. You'll ask me the kasha, well, isn't this going to wedge as a chatzitza between gula and tefillah and break up smichus? Nein. Kevan de kavur rabbanim itfila kitfila richta damya. The Chachamim established that the introduction to tefila should be at the recitation of Hashem Sosai Tiftach. Now becomes an integral part of tefila itself. It's a tefila rucha that begins a little bit earlier with Hashem Sosai Tiftach. And I mentioned in the past that my Rebbe Rav Salveitchik was very makpid that the Shliach Tzibur, when he recites Shron Esrei for the repetition, he should start by reciting Hashem Sosai Tiftach out loud, because the Tzibur has to be able to hear the entire Shmon Esrei, and the Gemara establishes that Hashem Sosai Tiftach is Tfilah Richta, it's an integral part of Shmon Esrei. Now the Gemara asks, is there actually a precedent for this concept of the Chachamim adding something, and yet it's part of a different entity, a different mitzvah, a different bracha? If you don't agree with this, Arvis Hechi Motzi Somech, how could Rabbi Yochanan possibly assume that this Smichus Gilu Tefillah and Arvis Vaboy LeMeimash Kivenu, there's an entire bracha that wedges its way between Gal Yisrael and Shmon Esrei? Ella, the answer must be, and we saw this already on Daf Dalet Beis, came into Takinu Rabban Ashkivenu. Once the Rabbanon enacted Ashkivenu and they required a Kigula Richter Dami, it's part of the bracha, it's an extension of Gal Yisrael. So we already have a precedent for this concept of Arichta, of the Chachamim extending Gal Yisrael, or extending Shmon Esrei. Came into Kavur Rabbanon Bitfila Kitfila Richter Damya. We'll have time with Shem later. We'll talk about why the Gemara needs Hashkivenu as the precedent for Hashem Sosai Tiftach and this Harichta concept. And now, Rabbi Yon is very important. Why is Hashem Sosai Tiftach considered part of Tefillah? And he says that David HaMelech was asking from Hashem that he should be mochel him, he should forgive him for the great sin of Batsheva. And even though he was amazed, and therefore there's no kaparas karban is only for a shogeg, but nevertheless he asked Hashem to help him to have the proper kavod in tefillah, so that his tefillah would be considered in front of the Ribbono Shel'olam like a karban. And that means because Hashem would know the sincerity of this tefillah, and Hashem would accept it as a replacement for a carbon. That's Hashem Sosai Tiftach. Ufi Agiti L'Sech. We're asking Hashem to give us the energy and the spiritual fortitude to have the right kavana to uplift our, upgrade our tefillos to the level of karbanos, so that even in a case of Chas V'Shalom B'mezi, we could ask Hashem for kapara through tefillah kekarbon. But even in that sense, greater than a carbon, that it could be mechaper even on an avera b'mezid. I just wanted to add something to what we had discussed earlier. In one of the shiurim, we had discussed the question of a Talmud Chacham sheshachach Talmudo machmas onso, and we compared him to Shivrei Luchos. So, just on the side, I wanted to just make the point that I think it's the Kedushas HaTorah that's chal in the person, maybe even what you call a Kedushas HaGuf, like the Shivrei Luchos has a Kedushas HaGuf, so too the Talmud Chacham has a Kedushas HaGuf. And even if he forgets his Torah, that Kedusha is not paka bichdi, it doesn't just evaporate. Back to our sugya, just that sort of pause. Rabbi Yochanan, we said before, spoke about not only Hashem Sosai Tiftach as the introduction to Shmon Esrei, but he also at the same time spoke about Yil Ratzon Refi as an addition to the end of Shmon Esrei. Michdi, the Gemara says, Hai Yil Ratzon Refi Mashma Lebasof. In other words, the Gemara wants to analyze how this pasuk of Yil Ratzon Refi, which again is a pasuk in Tilim, how do we know
that's mashma lebasov, who mashma meikara, because just as well it could be mashma that you're making this statement and this supplication before Shmona Esrei as an introduction. Why? Because you leratzon, you know, as you enter into Shmona Esrei. So the Gemara says, even though it has a double usage, it's mashma lebasof and at the same time mashma lechatchila meikara, nevertheless, debeino lemeimar, when a person says Takodesh Baruch Hu, my will is to daven to you, to be mispalel, so then why did the Rabbanon choose to use Imrei Yilaratzim Refi as an addendum post Shmona Esrei, not as an introduction to Shmona Esrei? And the answer is, my time at Tekinu Rabbanon Liachar Shmona Esrei Brachos, Lemur Meikoram Rabbi Yehuda Bered, Rabbi Shim Ben Pazi, Hovelo Omro David Eliachar Shmona Esrei Parshios. Because David HaMelech added this expression and this supplication to God in the 19th chapter of Tehillim. And that means that you've already fulfilled your 18, your number 18, with the 18 progress, bakoshes, and brachos of Shmona Esrei. Now you're ready for 19, and that's the postscript. That's going to be the 19th chapter of Tehillim of Yil Ratzin Refi. Lefichach takinu rabbono liachar Shmona Esrei brachos. That's why they establish it after Shmona Esrei brachos. Now this Gemara vacillating back and forth as to where Yil Ratzin should be with the final answer based on the number 19, it's the 19th chapter, is a little bit odd because, you know, you wonder, since Rabbi Yochanan advocates that the introduction to Shmona Esrei should be Hashem Sosai Tivtach, which is in a different chapter of Tehillim, we already have an introduction. Why do we need another introduction? And furthermore, there's no question about Hashem Sosai Tivtach, God open my lips. There's no way you can put that after the Shmona Esrei. And if Yil Ratzin Refi could work in one of two ways, and it could be used after Shmona Esrei, then why is Gemara pushing the envelope that it should be an introduction to Shmona Esrei? Meikara. So if you take a look in the Tosa Rush, he says that what the Gemara had was really vacillating about, was bothered by, is that since in the Pasuk Yil Ratzin, the Geula is mentioned, we say Hashem Tzuri V'Goali, God is my Redeemer, and now we're insisting on what we call Smichus Gula L'Tfila, it would make sense therefore that Hashem Tzuri V'Goali, with the emphasis on Geula, which culminates with Yancha Hashem B'Yom Tzara, would be a perfect pasuk to bridge between Geula and Tfila, and therefore we should really appropriately have it as an introduction to Tfila. And the Gemara answers that the reason why Yil Ratzon is not going to be an introduction is because we feel that since David HaMelech established this as the 19th chapter, he would recite it after the 18 brachos of Shmona Esrei, and we're following in his lead. So the Gemara asks the following question now. How can you tell me, this Rabbi Yehuda, in the name of Shimon Pazi, that the reason why Yil Ratzin is after Shmona Esrei is because it's in the 19th chapter? In truth, it's not in the 19th chapter. Hani Shmona Esrei, Tre Esrei Havyon. And what the Gemara is asking is that this pasuk should not be in the 19th chapter, if the whole point of Rabbi Yochanan is that this is also considered Tfila Richter. Notice, he's not attaching a whole new bracha to Shmona Esrei or anything corresponding thereof, but rather he wants this Yil Ratzin Refi to be integrated into the very essence of Shmona Esrei, and therefore it should be in the 18th chapter of Tehillim, when in fact we know it's in the 19th chapter. And now the Gemara pulls a real fast one on us, that in truth we made a mistake. We assumed that Yil Ratzon was in the 19th chapter, it's really in the 18th chapter, and therefore it's appropriately an end to the 18th bracha, and it's tagged on to Shmona Esrei. And what makes our counting of the Kapitlach in Tehillim in such a way that now Yil Ratzon is in the 18th chapter? The answer is because Ashrei Ish, the Lama Rogshu Agoyim, which we have as two separate chapters in our counting of Tehillim, Chada Parsha, they really belong to one Parsha.
Now, even though in every Sefer Tehillim that we know of, Ashrei and Lama Rogshu are separated into two parashios, it's possible that the Chachamim added they split this parasha because they added another bracha to Shmoneh Esrei. We have 19 brachas to Shmoneh Esrei. They added Birchas Aminim. So in order to make sure that Yilu Ratzon would still be in the very last number, the very last bracha of Shmoneh Esrei as a tag on, so what they did was they separated the first parak and split it into two, such that now Ashrei Ha'ish and Lama Rogshu Ha'Goyim are two different chapters. The Amar Rabbi Yehuda Berei, the Rabbi Shim Ben Pazi, Mea Vesholosh Parshios Amar David, V'lo Amar Haleluka Acherabim Apaltam Shel Rishayim. So the magic number here of Parshios, of Kapitlach, of Bizmorim and Tilim, that David authored is 103. But again, that goes up to the Hallelukas. So he hasn't yet recited any Hallelukas. And why is he postponing Hallelukah until after 103? Shenemar, because in the 104th chapter, which opens, which is really a chapter about the defeat of the enemies, that David thanks Hashem, Yitamu chatoim min ha'aretz v'rishoyim odinam, then barchi nafshi es Hashem aluka. Now that the chatoim, those who are attacking me, my adversaries, are destroyed, now I'm ready to recite haluka. So the Gemara immediately asks, Hani mea v'sholosh mea v'arba havyon. We calculated this chapter, which you call 103, and we see it's 104. And the answer is, El Shmamino, here's a proof that Ashrei Ha'ish and Lama Rogshu Ha'Goyim had a parashia, that if we combine these two parashias into one, then we understand how the number is going to be 103 instead of 104. The Omar of Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, Omar Rav Yochanan, and here we turn to Daf Yud Amud Aleph. Kol parasha shahoisach aviv al David pasach babi Ashrei v'siim babi Ashrei. So that any special, parasha or kapitul til which David had a special was beloved to David, he would add a seal, so to speak, an opening and a closing. The brackets, he would start with an Ashrei and end with an Ashrei, and this is what we have here in the Ashrei Ha'ish. And he opens up with Ashrei, and then he finishes up with Ashrei when he says Ashrei kol chosei bo, which we have again, as we said at the outset, in our second chapter of Tehillim, but it's really in the first chapter of Tehillim. Only when we combine what we have as two chapters, the first two chapters, only then do we have the Ashrei at the beginning, the Ashrei at the end. The strange thing about this Gemara, as Tosfos points out, is that the language of Rabbi Yochanan here is kol parsha, as if to say there were a whole bunch of parshas. Really, we only find one parsha in Tehillim that begins with Ashrei and ends with Ashrei. Ayin Shom, take a look. Hanu Biryone. They were very difficult people, David Bishvivusa. They were created, they're really a bad crowd that lived in the Shvivuse, in the close neighborhood of Rabbi Meir, Vavikom Etzari Le Tuva, and they created a lot of problems for Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir suffered tremendously from Havikom Boy, Rabbi Meir Rachme Iluye Kiechi Delemuse, and he wanted to pray to God that God would take the lives of these enemies. Omro Le Bruria Le Tvesehu. Beisehu means his wife Bruria. This is one of the famous encounters between Rabbi Meir and his wife Bruria. She says to him, "Ma datcha? How do you interpret the tefillah of David HaMelech that we've been discussing in Perek 104 of Tehillim? Mishum deksivi tamu chatoi min haaretz, as if to say that David was being mispalled that the evildoers should die? No. You misunderstood the pasuk, Rabbi Meir. Miksiv chotim. It doesn't say that the chotim, the sinner, should die, but rather chatoim ksiv, without a vav. And the chatoim means the David was praying for the cessation, the termination of their sins, their actions, not for the death and the downfall of the rishoyim. The hope is that the rishoyim would do tshuva.
V'od, and furthermore, Shapel, go down, L'Sefer, to the end of the Pasuk, Dikra. And what does it say at the end of the Pasuk? Rishoyim Odeinam. It does, if you're interpreting Chatoim as a reference to Chotim, then basically David is just repeating himself when he says Rishoyim Odeinam. Kevan di'itamu Chatoim, if you're telling me that Chatoim means Chotim, then why does he repeat himself from Rishoyim Erinam El, but rather, Boy Rachmi Iloyayu de Lehedri B'tshuva, what you should be mispal is to God to give them the insight and the fortitude to do tshuva, Rishoyim Odeinam, and then there will no longer be Rishoyim. Boy Rachmi Iloyayu, and instead, Rabbi Meir, taking the advice of his wife, he was mispalel for these individuals that they should do tshuva. Vahadru, Vahadaru, B'tshuva, and they actually were Chozer B'tshuva. Okay, now we're going to have another Gemara here about a Tzduki, but with Mirtz Hashem, we'll pick that up in the next year.